Welcome everyone and good afternoon. My name is Jess W. I am a compulsive eater and one of your co-hosts for this session. Let us all begin with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right. Before we kick off the session, in honoring our 11th tradition, we respectfully ask that no OA member be photographed, videotaped, or identified by full name at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication, which includes the internet, or any other new media technologies. Please protect your anonymity and only use your first name and last initial as your screen name. You can use the rename function to do so. We will also be renaming people if we see their full last name on the screen. We'd like to help people who are looking for a sponsor or sponsee to do so this weekend. To that effect, we'd like everyone who qualifies as one or both of these descriptions to rename yourselves in the following fashion. If you are an available sponsor, add an S, the letter S for sponsor, before your name. If you are looking for a sponsor, add an L, like love, before your name. If you fit into both categories, add SL before your name. Mary Frances, will you put an example in our chat window when you have a moment?
I did, but it went to Host Supreme.
Oh.
So.
Okay. Well, we'll work on that.
What happened? I'm sorry.
We need to paste I put the directions
in the chat, but it went to you, not to everybody.
Oh, all right. I'll do it. Hello, I'm your host. That one? Okay, hold on.
Thank you so much. Okay, the opinions expressed in the session are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Mm-hmm. OA members are reminded when sharing to speak to your recovery and the solution offered by the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Mm-hmm. Note that the attendee to attendee chat feature is disabled during this session to minimize disruption and crosstalk. You will be able to chat with the co-hosts if you're having a technical problem. You also will not be able to unmute yourself until a co-host has allowed you to do so. After you share, please mute yourself and also turn off your video when moving around or if you are eating. Finally, for your information, all sessions are being recorded, audio only, in their entirety. When we place these recordings on our website, we will edit them to only have the panelists shares or keynotes share, and no open sharing or questions will be included. I will now turn the meeting over to Maria G to introduce our keynote speaker. Maria G, where are you?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi everyone, good evening. My name is Maria G, food addict, compulsive overeater from Hoboken. So I have the pleasure of introducing our keynote speaker, Sean, tonight. I met Sean back in 2012 when I lived in the DC, Virginia area, and I was attending meetings there. I followed his journey and his progress through the program, and I personally have learned so much from him, from his shares at all the different meetings, from his participation in the workshops. And his shares for me have just been so incredible. He's so honest, so raw, and has such insight into this program. I might have stalked him a little bit to get him to keynote tonight. Sean, I apologize for that, but I am so grateful that you agreed to speak today and that you all get to hear his words of wisdom. So with that, I will turn it over to Sean. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You actually make me feel like relevant and real. My name is Sean, and I keep coming back. That is what I say at all the meetings that I attend, and I will tell you in just a moment why. And I am super, super excited to be with you here today on this very special day for our nation, right? For our nation, for everyone. No matter what side you are on, it is very important that we have the opportunity as a nation to come together, celebrate and become who we are. And this kind of stuff makes me eat this kind of stuff makes me eat. It pushes me right over the edge. And so I am so happy to be able to be in front of you abstinent today. Despite an election, I am abstinent today. And so I offer you these remarks, and I would ask you to do what so many of the old timers in this program told me to do, and that is to take what you like and leave the rest. And so I will tell you what it was like, you know, what happened and what it is like now. And it is my greatest hope that some part of what I say inspires you, pushes you to another day of abstinence. Every single day that we have in abstinence is so much better than any of the days that we had when we were struggling. And so for those of you out there who are still struggling, you're trying to get there and you're not there yet, I want you to know from a person who has the story to prove it, there is a miracle, and the miracle is there. You know, you just can't leave before the miracle happens. And so I will use that as an intro. I am from upstate New York, the other New York, and I was born and raised in upstate New York. In a family, I grew up on welfare. I grew up in a family with, you know, my mom had four kids by four different men by the age of 20. And so she did the best she could, but the truth was we got off to a really rough start. And so it was going to be difficult for us growing up in that kind of environment and with those kinds of situations. I grew up in a city where there were Black people, white people, and then Puerto Ricans. That was what there were. And so white people were wealthy and middle class, and Black people were poor and working class, and Puerto Ricans were sometimes someplace you could find them. And that was what it was. And that was my world. That was my world. But I grew up in a family where being overweight was not a big thing. Like being fat was I was expected to grow up, to get married and be miserable like everybody else. Like me being overweight, I always think long and hard about my white female contemporaries and the difficulty of the messages that they get around their body image. I didn't get those messages, never. You know, I was all the fat people that I grew up around, not very many fat people that I grew up around, but they were, you know, they were okay. You know, you were okay. Now, I did grow up in the 70s when I was a little kid in the 70s when, you know, hey, I was the only fat kid in the class. And so dodgeball was a very difficult sport for me because the ball seemed to always be coming my way. And I certainly thought that as a kid, that Husky was a name brand. And that it was my name brand, right? And I was always the kid who had the Huskies. And, you know, it was kind of like, oh yeah, we're gonna get all this stuff, but I'm gonna get the Husky one, right? Which was a special brand for me. And so I will describe for you, I will say this, for those of you who are listening, for all of the reasons that all of you chose food as your addiction, I chose food for all of those reasons. Because we were poor and we didn't have enough. Because I felt ugly, right? Because my father was never around and I never got to know him as a child and I felt abandoned. Because I had inappropriate sexual contact as a kid. Because my family used food as a way to show love, and they would give you food as a way to show love. And in my family, that was just what you did. And you never said no to food because there wasn't enough. I wasn't enough. I wasn't white enough, short enough, skinny enough. I wasn't tall enough, smart enough, all of the enoughs, just like you. Pick your set of poisons, and I promise you, I came to this drug for the exact same reasons that you came to this drug. And that was one of the most wonderful realizations that I had coming into this program and seeing people who were very different from me and wanting to run because I didn't want to be here. But when you opened your mouths and started telling your stories, I was like, oh my God, I got that. I had that. Oh, we are the same. And so I just want to say that for all the reasons, find the most painful reason that you describe as the reason why you came into the program. I'm raising my hand. Me too. I came for that reason too. I came by it honestly. Everyone in my house, we all used food. I was the only one that got fat from it. My mom was a pretty big woman. And my aunts were pretty big women, and the women in our family ran the roost. And so we loved them, and there was nothing wrong with being big. It was what you were. And so I was just a boy who was big, right? But again, I never got any, I think it was in high school when I started to understand that, oh, I'm too big for certain things. But before then, I did not have the image. There are three things that happened to me that made me realize that there was a problem. One, I remembered that, you know, we were on welfare. And so my mom did a very good job of like scrounging money away. And at the beginning of every summer, we would go to Kmart and she would get all these clothes and she would put it on layaway, right? You put it on layaway. Some folks in this room know exactly what that is. There's some of you who have no clue what the hell I'm talking about. But you put your clothes on layaway, and what you do is you pay every week. You go and you pay a little bit. And you know, by the end of summer, my mom could get all the clothes off layaway for all of our kids, and we could start school with new clothes. And there were only a couple of summers where we were a week into school before she could pay it all off, but she did a pretty good job. She was an amazing woman on with nothing, right? With doing the best she could with nothing. And so one summer, we went all down to the Kmart, the beginning of summer, we got all these clothes, put them all away. And my mom got them out like literally 2 weeks early. She was just so proud that she was able to get them out early. And I remember that I couldn't fit them. The clothes that we had picked out in the beginning of summer, I couldn't fit them. And I remember my mother looking at me and saying, "You can't even fit into the Huskies anymore," you know? And I don't know, but at that moment I knew that I was big in a way that was wrong. Like I was big in a way that was wrong. I was a pretty young kid, but they were pretty clothes, pretty little like clothes that I was excited about. I was excited about wearing them. And I could get into none of them. And I don't remember what we finally did, but I remember feeling like dirt for several weeks because I couldn't get into any of those clothes that she had gotten off layaway. Another incident that occurred for me that made me feel wrong. I remember that I was in high school and I went to a very good high school. I was lucky. My mom fought like hell to get me into an extremely, extremely good high school. And you got to see the psychologist once in 4 years and you got to see the counselor once in 4 years. So I get my visit with the psychologist, and I remember I didn't know this woman, right? And I knew nothing. Right? Like you get to see this psychologist once in 4 years. I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. And so I go in and I remember she told me that I was morbidly obese. And I had never heard that term before, but I was a really charming kid that everybody loved. And so I went to my science teacher, who was my favorite teacher, my biology teacher. And I said, "Mr. Wolf," she said, "I was morbidly obese. What does that mean?" You know, because the way she looked at me like I was a crime. She looked at me like I was a crime. And I'm a Black kid growing up in the mid 80s. And I know what it's like to feel like a crime, to feel like you're wrong. Even though I was a pretty cool kid who never got into trouble, I always felt like trouble was around me. I could get in trouble. I could do something wrong. And my mother, who loved me and always saw me as the kid who didn't get in trouble, always made me know you could go out there and do something, right? Like, you know, nobody's perfect and you could mess up too. And so I was always worried about that. And I remember her literally looking at me as if I was a crime and saying, "You are morbidly obese." And I knew it was wrong. I knew it was bad. And I went and asked him. And I remember going home after he had explained to me what this is. And I still didn't quite understand it, but I knew that I was fat to death. That I was fat to death. And I think I ate for 2 or 3 weeks after that. I think I just ate. You know, that was not a really healthy visit with a psychologist. That was not a great visit with a therapist. And I am absolutely sure that she thought she was going to shock me into losing weight, because at that time people thought that you could just shock people. It was a choice. You're eating this way because you choose to eat this way. It's not because there's an illness or a disease or a sickness. No, there's no word about addiction. It was just, you know, you're fat and you need to stop. And so I had that experience, and just these experiences made me feel like I was bad. I went to college, and I already had way more than the freshman 15 when I got there, but I picked up about another freshman 50. And I remember that I fell in like with a girl, right? And she was very thin, and she was not going to have anything to do with me at my weight. And so now I'm starting to get these messages that I'm quote unquote too big. Or at least too big for her, because there were plenty of heavyset guys who had girlfriends, but this one that I wanted wasn't going to work out for her. But one summer she decides she was gonna take a class the next year. It was a jogging class. And so she wanted to get herself ready for it. And so I said, okay, I'll join you. I'll go out with you every day and we can walk the track and get ourselves ready. And you know, we were at college, we were there for summer. And so we're walking around this track and you know, we're gonna walk the first night and then the next night she's gonna run a little. And I was like, you're gonna get ahead of me, but we'll see what happens. And I remember the first night that I ran, I ran a quarter of the quarter mile track. And I started walking, and that was fine because I had no intent. This was not my intent. And then the next night I ran a half of that quarter mile. And I was like, wow, I doubled it. And so the next night I ran that quarter mile track twice. By the end of the week, I was running a mile. And by the end of summer, I was running 5 miles a day. And I burned off 50 pounds so quick. It was amazing. And okay, I was getting her attention a little bit more and attention from everybody else a little bit more. When I saw the doctor that year, she looked at my knees and said, I'm gonna need you to have knees when you're 30. So you gotta stop running at 300 pounds around this track, you know? But I was hooked on it and I was losing weight. I'd never lost weight before. And so I did that. And, you know, then I was in Buffalo, New York, and Buffalo, New York gets winter. And there were some white people who ran during winter, but Black people don't run during winter. It was like not a part. And so the running went away and, you know, the freshman 50 plus some. And I remember it was the first time that I felt extremely deflated, watching your body swell up in front of you and no ability to do anything about it. It was driving me crazy. And so I finished college, I came home and, you know, had a few situations where, again, my family was like, you are fat and fabulous. Go off, get happy. You're educated. You're the only one in our family who has a degree. You're a teacher. People love you. Go off and be happy, right? Go off and make happiness. But I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy. And somehow inside of me, regardless of what I was being told, regardless of the experience with my family, who all were overeaters at that time, I knew that something about the way that I was eating was bad. I was taking food to bed at night. I was getting food up in the morning. I told myself I was allergic to breakfast. I had one meal. It started at 4. It ended when I fell asleep, right? And I knew there was something wrong with that. There was no, I didn't need anybody to tell me something was wrong. I knew that there was, I was eating sneakily, right? People weren't seeing me. People were like, I don't know how you're that big. I never see you eat. You never eat breakfast. You never eat lunch. How are you that big? And I knew, like, I was making up for that, right? Like right around 4 o'clock. And I would get real irritable if people were not out of my life and out of my face by 4 so that I could indulge. At that point in time, I did Atkins. I found Atkins and I dropped 75 pounds in 2 months. And for the first time I was skinny in the view of everybody else. And all of a sudden I had this awesome experience of, you know, I remember when I came into program, somebody told me that the reason that I struggled when I lost weight that first time was because I had not paid attention to the fact that I had done a lot of work to be 320 pounds. I'd done a lot of work. I'd done a massive amount of work to be 320 pounds. It takes work to get to that size and to maintain that weight. And I've maintained that weight I had been over 100 pounds overweight from the time that I was above the age of 12. So I'd been 100 pounds overweight or more for my entire life, as far as I could remember. And I'd done a lot of work. I did it because I needed to have that weight. That weight did something for me that nothing else could. I didn't understand what it was doing for me, but I knew it was doing something and I needed that weight there. I needed it there for some reason. So when I did Atkins and the weight came off, I was charming, funny, thoughtful, the life of the party. I was all of these things. I had always been all those things because I was using it as a way to compensate for the weight. So I was all of these things. And all of a sudden I was all of those things and damn good looking too. Now, I always thought I was damn good looking, but when I was in that mirror with clothes on, right? As long as you had clothes on, it was, I was like, whoa, yeah. And my friends started treating me differently and everybody treated me differently. And all of a sudden people were trying to get me to do things that I was not prepared to do, including be sexual. I had just not been. And I've lived with the myth that Black men live with, that we are, you know, Black, we're always ready to fight and have sex. Those are things where that's a stereotype that we are buried in. And I had largely been able to escape that because I was large. I was big and it kept me from that. All of a sudden I wasn't. and people were coming for me and they wanted the myth. I remember one day being in the grocery store, and if you remember Atkins, you were supposed to walk the edge of the store. And I was on the edge of the store picking out my things on the edge of the store, and a woman walked up to me and she basically invited me to anonymous sex. Let's go and let's do it. You are too good looking for me in this grocery store, and so let's go and let's do it. And, you know, she obviously needed a 12-step program of her own. But I remember going from the produce aisle to the Betty Crocker aisle, and I went on the Betty Crocker diet. I baked a cake a day, and I ate a cake a day. And I didn't consciously know that I was trying to put that weight back on, but subconsciously, obviously, I was, because that request triggered in me all of these things that I didn't know were at the core of why I had the weight in the first place, right? Why I was doing the work to keep that weight on my body, right? And so that's how I came into this program. I came into this program defeated, having lost weight and put it back on again, in a body that was swelling in front of my eyes again, at a pace that I couldn't control. And knowing, as a person who was a Christian, who sat on a church pew every single Sunday, who had a God I believed in truly, 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 truly deeply, I couldn't understand why he had not taken this weight off my body, why he couldn't make me stop eating. I just didn't understand. And so I know that for many of you in this program who struggle with the religious part of this program, I hear you. Believe me, as a religious person, I struggled with it too. I struggled with it too. I had a God who needed to fix this, who I had seen heal people, and I needed him to heal this, right? And so I came into this program defeated, right? Like, I had won everything in my life. I triumphed over everything in my life. I've never taken an L. And this thing was kicking my ass. It was kicking my ass, and there was no way around it. I remember being in the car on the way to work, being told if I was late to work one more time, I would be fired. And I'm driving down the highway, and the brand new Krispy Kreme had just opened. And I'm driving on the highway, and the hot and ready light came on. First day they opened, hot and ready. And I'm driving by saying, you are not getting off. You are going to be fired, as my car is veering to the right. And you are not getting off. You cannot do this. You're going to be late. Are you just going to drive by? You're just going to drive by. I just drove. Look at the size of that line. You cannot get on that line. You cannot park your car. You cannot park your car. You cannot get out of this car. You cannot get on that line. Look at the size. You cannot. It will be an hour. You cannot wait the hour to get that box of donuts that did not make it to work. And so that, my friends, is an example of a higher power. When something can make you do something that you have sworn not to do, when you're telling yourself not to do it, and keep you in a cycle of behavior for hours where you make a choice to do something that you're saying you will not do it, you cannot do it, you don't need to do it, in no way is it good for you, and you do it, that's a power that is higher than you. And at that very moment, I knew, this thing is a God. This is as powerful as a God for you. It's as powerful as a God. It just made you pull off the road and damn near lose your job. And if it wasn't for the fact that I was so damn good at my job that my principal kept saving me, this disease would have ended my career. It could have, it should have. And that is what brought me into the rooms, realizing I'm just completely defeated. I remember having a vision one night about what God wanted me to do and seeing the vision is so big and saying, God, there's no way you can put me there if you don't fix me. The wake of damage that I will leave behind if you do not get me right, I can't do that. So if you want me to get right, then you got to fix me. I opened the book, and when I opened the book, OA was on the page in the phone book. I dialed the number, and the first number person who picked up became my first sponsor. Told me to go to a meeting. I went to a meeting in the suburbs of the city that I lived in. And I walked in and there were 5-6 people. All of them were I think I was 30 then, and they were all much, 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 much older, much bigger. They were all white. And I was like, you gotta get the hell out of here, right? I saw steps 4, 5, 8, 9, and I was like, oh no. No, 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 no. But I was a good boy, so I didn't leave before it was time. And at the end, I remember a woman walked up to me and she said, this meeting is not for you. It was obvious. That's okay. But I want to say a couple of things to you. Please keep coming back. We ask you to go to 6 meetings before you decide that this is not for you. So please keep coming back. And there's a miracle that's going to happen for you. And I just don't want you to quit before that miracle happens. It was like, go and be well, right? And so I went to another meeting. That statement made me go to another meeting. There's a miracle in this room. I remember going to the meeting, and it was the second meeting I went to, and I was like, ah, I can be here. People were younger. There was somebody who wasn't white in the room, right? And I was like, okay, I can be here. And for I'm gonna tell you something. I didn't hear anything they said at that first meeting because I was just too freaked out by 4, 5, 8, 9, by the room, by these people. I didn't hear anything. But in the second meeting, I heard these people. I heard them talk and tell my story. And I said, oh, okay. And I remember that for months, my sponsor was brilliant. I just listened in the rooms and I was listening because he was like, Sean, you're not the pink cloud person. So when people start sharing the story of they came in and they got abstinent right away, don't listen. That's not your story. And I was like, I know. And so I listened to someone and they said, you know what? I was in these rooms for 2 years before I got, and I was like, no, I don't like 4 and 5 enough for that, right? And then I heard somebody else who said, oh, yeah, I was in the room for 5 years. I was like, okay, that might get me to 5 to 6 or 7, but no. And I remember hearing a story, and somebody, I was in the room for 12 years before I was like, that's my girl. That's my gal. Thank you, I needed to hear that. My sponsor was brilliant. My first abstinence was no yellow cake with chocolate frosting. That was it. He said, you can have purple cake with green frosting. You can have strawberry cake with blue frosting. You just cannot have yellow cake with chocolate frosting. That's it. That's all I'm asking you to do, right? Just don't have yellow cake with chocolate frosting. Because of course I walked into the rooms and my word was no. Hell no. What she did, no sugar, hell no. No flour. That's like, I could never go and see my aunt again in my life if I don't eat. I will no longer be black if I cannot eat macaroni and cheese. Like, this is no, right? And so I just said that so much that I couldn't. But he said, okay, Sean, just no yellow cake with chocolate frosting. You'll still be black. you'll still be 30. You'll still be a teacher. You'll still be all of these things. Your identity will not change. By the end of that year, that man had me weighing and measuring 3 meals a day with nothing in between. It was brilliant. I still think of him to the brilliant, wherever he is, Kevin, I think it was brilliant. You know, my second abstinence was okay, no cake at all. Eat whatever you want to eat during the day, no cake at all. You know, then it was like, okay, I know you're allergic to breakfast. I told him I was allergic to breakfast. He's like, no, let's just try a little something for breakfast. Tell you, I'll let you have cake for breakfast. You can have cake for breakfast, right? We're going to have breakfast. You're going to have 3 meals a day. You can have 5 meals a day, but you got to have 3. You can't have one that starts at 4 and doesn't end. It was just this brilliant, like, I'm going to work with this ridiculously, like, obstinate person. And by the end of the, I was 3 meals a day with nothing in between at times during the day. And that, the years like that regulated my life. So I will say there were some things that happened to me in program that I just need to share, and then I will be done with you. Program has taught me some things. One, I had to refit my relationship with a higher power. My higher power was an old white guy who looked like Charlton Heston, who had a lightning bolt in his hand, and he was looking down, waiting to strike me. That was what he was. And that's not the kind of God who's gonna help me with food. I had been every Sunday of my life in a church where they were preaching to me that God was taking care of the mountains, and making sure the ocean stays at bay, and making sure that things don't fall out of the sky and hit the earth. And that was what God was for. And you were supposed to handle your problems and just not do anything bad, unless the lightning would come out of his hand and then you get struck. And that's not a God I could work with to get this done, right? And I was a Pentecostal Baptist Christian. We believe in everything we believe in. We believe in it deeply, but I couldn't. And so my sponsor said, I want you to do a wanted ad. Why don't you do a resume for your God? Just let your God go and just do one for the God you would want, right? And I put this thing together and he said, now I just want you to submit it to God. That was our step 3. And I prayed that and my God said, yes, absolutely. And thank you for freeing me from that thing that was in your mind. I never wanted to be that anyway. I promise you, I put a formula in place that means that the oceans will stay where they are. I put a formula in place that will keep the valleys where they are and the mountaintops where they are. I find much more interest in figuring out what you're gonna eat today. That is where I get most of my interest in the day. And that switched everything for me because now this all-powerful God was talking to me and I was talking to him and we were figuring this thing out together. OA helped me to realize that I struggle with an issue called desire. And desire is an entity on its own. It is an insatiable, burning hole that exists inside me, and it is to consume. And the reason that I say that it's an entity on its own, and it's an entity on its own because if I get the thing that I desire, I immediately start to desire something else. I hear that. Thank you. That's the 10 minute,
five
right?
Minutes.
Thank you, five minutes. Thank you. Okay. I immediately start to desire something else. I immediately start to desire something else. And so I realized that the reason that it was such a burning hole was because the 12 and 12 describes perversion for me in a way that is amazing. It says perversion is when you take something and you try to use it for something that it is not designed for. And so God has put inside me a desire to be with him, to commune with him, to have a relationship with him. And I'm only satisfied when that desire is met. And when that desire is met, I can eat normal and food can be what it's supposed to be, right? I can drink and not overdrink. I can be engaged in relationships and not be overbearing in the relationship or try to take from the relationship or try to manipulate the person. But if I have not done that, then what I will do is I will try to take food and put it in the place of God. And I'll try to have food do what God does. I'll try to have a woman do what God does. I'll try to have gambling do what God does, or sex do what God does, or buying things. I will try and take something and I will make it do what it's not supposed to do. And because it doesn't work, I have perverted it and I end up overeating, oversexed, over money, overspend, over. I'm going to pervert the thing that I touch. And the reason I pervert the thing that I touch is because the desire is still there. And so I have to wake up and participate in a series of rituals and actions that suffice the communal need that I have with the higher power of my understanding. And when I can do that, then I can be on this call and I can be of good mind. I can be of good soul. I can share with you in a way that doesn't overdo it, that doesn't underdo it, that gives you my story. You can take from it what you need. It can be balanced because I am not using the opportunity to tell my story to overdo something else. If I didn't share today, I'd be fine. And if I share today, I'm fine. And it is because I've taken, this program has taught me that I need to take care of my spiritual man so that the physical, everything else will get in balance, right? Everything else will get in balance. If you had told me 20 years ago, I've been coming back for 20 years, getting bigger and getting smaller, I'd rather get big in front of you than just out in that world. And let me tell you something, getting smaller in this world was no fun either out there, but it was better with you. You take better care of me. Getting bigger, shrinking or swelling, you take better care of me. So I lost the weight 5 or 6 years ago, 120 pounds, and I've kept it off. Why? Because I did the work. 10, 12 years of it, and I understood what he meant. Oh, you lost the weight and you hadn't done any work to lose it. And so you were in a body and you didn't deserve to be in that body because you were still working for the other body. You were still doing the work for the other body, so you kept going back to it. Because you were still doing that mental, physical, spiritual, emotional work to be at 320 pounds. So you kept going back to it. And now you've done a different work. And so now you've done that work. And when you go to the grocery store and a woman walks up to you and asks you for sex, you're gonna tell her, look, I got a program I want you to think about. This is something else that I've learned in this program. Being abstinent means that I am available to provide service when it is needed. Because when I'm eat all into the food, I walk by someone who's hurting or is in need and I don't even know it. I don't even see it. I don't even understand it to be there because I'm so in my head and in my heart and in my emotions trying to figure that out that I cannot notice that someone next to me has a service that only I can provide. And so this program has taught me that we can all be superheroes. We can all be superheroes for the people who are around us every day because we have a gift that we can give to them. And we also have the availability of our mind and heart to be able to see that a need exists. And that can't happen if we're buried in food or money or whatever it is, or whatever it is. They told me that I didn't, it was Overeaters Anonymous, not Overeaters Analysis. My sponsor said, why am I overeating? He said, because you're an overeater. That's why you overeat, because you're an overeater. That's why you do it, because you're an overeater. That's your disease. So stop. With that, I will say to you that I look forward to another 20 years of coming back, getting a little bit bigger and smaller in front of you, and being able to, in a vulnerable way, present that to you before I present it to the world, because they won't treat me as nice. For those of you out there who are listening, I promise you there is a miracle in the room. Do not leave before it is happening. Keep coming back. Come back when it's working. Come back when it doesn't. Come back when it's working. Come back when it doesn't. It took me years. It may take you years. If it takes you minutes, great, but you keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.